This is Daniel Shore of CBS News. It is slow and tortuous going through the Friedrichstrasse checkpoint to get to the other side of Khrushchev's wall. The maze is here for a purpose, to control what goes out, to control what comes in. The real purpose, to get control of the 17 million people beyond the wall. The trouble was Berlin, the hole in the center. Through that hole, manpower leaked out, subversive ideas filtered in. No other communist-ruled country had such a problem to contend with except Hungary for those incredible few months in 1956. The hole had to be plugged to make East Germany safe for communism. The plugging started on August 13th, first with barbed wire and then the wall. Behind the problem of Berlin lies a problem country. We call it East Germany. The communists call it the German Democratic Republic. They have not been able to get any non-communist country to accept it. And worse from their viewpoint, they have not been able to get the population under their rule to accept it. CBS reports had been trying to get permission since last June to report from East Germany. The permission was first granted and then was canceled while the communists built their wall. In November, we were finally allowed to go through. The regime believed that the shock of the wall had passed and the country was under control. We crossed through the maze to the greater labyrinth beyond. The road for us started here at Friedrichstrasse. It took us 150 miles north to Rostock, East Germany's Baltic port city. In the next hour, we will report on what Ulbricht's communists are doing behind Khrushchev's wall of shame.
CBS reports the land beyond the wall was filmed over a three-week period in one East German city, 150 miles northwest of Berlin, 60 miles inside the Iron Curtain. Here now from Rostock, East Germany, is CBS News correspondent Daniel Shore.
This is Rostock, East Germany's window on the Baltic and on the world, the symbol of the communist plan for an indefinitely divided Germany. It is a made-to-order port for a made-to-order state, and minds must be made to order to go with it. East Germany is a hothouse plant. It can grow only in a carefully controlled climate. The wall has helped to shut out disturbing west winds. And now, with a mixture of communist zeal and German thoroughness, the regime proceeds to implant the desired image.
That's the light.
It starts in primary school. Young pioneers, Cub Scouts communist style, go through a ritual of dedicating themselves to the cause. The anthem they sing, I carry a flag, and that flag is red. Juvenile militancy in a poem with some modern overtones. An ode to the German communists who fought to make Berlin a red city.
Links! 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 Die Trommeln werden gerührt!
Left! 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 They'll beat the drums. We carry the truth from house to house. We chase the lies as our comrades taught. We feed our hate. We stir the flames, we warm our hearts with strength and courage until the last worker is ours. Left, left, left. They are killing our comrades, but the red vetting district lives on, and Berlin stays red. The fascist will fall, our fist on his neck, his rifle we snatch. The red sun glows a flame on the horizon. Fight, comrades! Storm column! Red front! Red front! Story time for the young pioneers is an inspirational talk from a communist veteran. 74-year-old Joseph Scharris tells them to go home and indoctrinate their parents. He tells them, you young people must teach your parents something too. You may excel your parents in wisdom. That can happen. It is no reason for shame.
Dann müsst ihr im Elternhaus als junge Menschen.
Then you, as young people, must spread knowledge in your parents' home. You must be able to say to your parents, listen, father and mother, why don't you do this?
Das tun doch andere.
Other people do it. So many are needed who are on top of this great movement. Why don't you get on top of it? You could tell this too to your parents, maybe later sometime, without offending them. The kiddies are also supposed to report what their parents discuss at home. They take home questionnaires that parents are supposed to sign, pledging not to listen to Western radio. One parent told us, we sign, and we listen all the same, when the children are not at home. Today in East Germany, the three R's are taught communist style, everything aimed at indoctrination. Not only reading and writing, but even arithmetic has built-in propaganda. The pupil learns sums not just by adding figures, but liters of milk produced on a collective farm. Distances run to Poland and Czechoslovakia. The pupil is taught to turn his mind away from forbidden West Germany just 60 miles away, to look inward to East Germany and eastward towards the Mecca of Moscow. At Rostock University, it is higher education in the communist mind. A compulsory course, 3 hours a week, is Marxism-Leninism. And after a seminar in communist ideology, we talk to some of the students of the DDR, that is, the German Democratic Republic. Do you young people think that you will see the unification of Germany in your lifetimes?
Yes.
And how do you see it happening?
They must achieve that the militarists and fascists in Western Germany go away. And then, in a long, long way ahead, we must achieve that the whole Germany must be a socialist Germany. And that is a task for the Western German working class.
To your minds, a unified Germany will have to be a socialist Germany.
Yeah.
Do you think that the signing of a separate peace treaty will postpone unification?
Maybe.
What is the importance of a separate peace treaty? What will it accomplish for you?
I think it will rise the our state in the eyes of many countries which didn't recognize us so far. It's a condition of real tension between the both camps, the socialist and the capitalist camps. And if we would have this peace treaty, maybe that the tension would be abolished.
But it seems to me that all the tension is about a peace treaty.
No.
That there were 16 years, or at least 15 or 14 years without tension until the demand for a peace treaty was made.
About tension?
More or less.
Oh, I can't agree with you on this point. Then.
What was the tension that went on here? Can you explain it, since I haven't been here before?
It was not only the tension about having a peace treaty or not, but about other questions as well, about disarmament, about atom bombs and so on. And all those questions would be solved if we had a peace treaty.
Yes, but since the peace treaty has been discussed, both the Soviet Union and the United States have increased their armaments.
So now the Western states didn't work up to a peace treaty. We can't sit here and put our hands down and do nothing and wait and look what will we do.
What will a peace treaty mean in your lives individually?
For our state, I see the example.
No, I don't speak of state now, I speak of you individually.
Yes,
what will it mean in your life?
I'm a member of my state. And I see the way of the Soviet Union. And I know that it will be our way. And it will be the way of the whole world, earlier or later.
Why does the American government refuse a peace treaty? Why don't they negotiate with us, or with the Soviet government about this topic?
I have to accept your question
as a statement, because when I came to this country, I promised not to make propaganda. Have any of you ever been in West Berlin?
Yes.
Did you like to go to West Berlin when you went there?
Why not?
Are you satisfied not to be able to go now?
No, I agree with that matter, and I don't want now, and of course I can't go to West Berlin.
What was it about West Berlin that made it necessary to build a wall to shut off West Berlin?
Politically, we were badly influenced from West Berlin. The whole system of espionage did us harm as well.
Do you feel, any of you, that America would go to war in order to preserve the present situation in West Berlin, or do you think that in the end America will give it up?
No, I think America will give it up in the end.
Yeah.
Why do you think so?
I really can't imagine that a simple American soldier would fight for a German city or Berlin. If I were an American soldier, I wouldn't fight for this.
The thought that Americans would not die for Berlin, true or not, is an essential part of a propaganda pattern teaching that the communist design will win without war. Nowhere in the communist world is propaganda hammered home more incessantly than in East Germany. Propaganda is almost a way of life for East Germans, for whom thought control did not start with communism in 1945, but with Hitler in 1933. Slogans are dinned into the East German from morning until night. Downtown, it's on the Lenin Road to the victory of communism. In his backyard, he's called upon to support the communist peace plan. He goes to work watched by spade-bearded communist chief Walter Ulbricht, a picture supposed to inspire him. And everywhere, the call for a Friedensvertrag, a peace treaty. Sometimes the sloganeers are caught short. The banners demanding a peace treaty in 1961 didn't come down fast enough when Khrushchev dropped his year-end deadline. But propaganda is administered in massive, indigestible doses by an anxious regime. For East Germany is on the front line of the Cold War, a third of a country that calls itself a state. A Teutonic appendage to communist East Europe, neurotic about being snubbed by the non-communist world, psychotic about the tug of West Germany on the loyalty of its people. And so thought control must not only implant ideas, but keep out ideas, the seductive Western ideas that still filter over the wall through the airwaves. Don't point your antenna to Hamburg television in West Germany. Don't listen to Western radio, and especially don't listen to RIAS, the American-operated radio station in Berlin. RIAS is East Germany's public enemy number one, listened to by an estimated 4 million despite round-the-clock jamming and despite penalties for repeating news heard on RIAS broadcasts. RIAS is a menace not only because it fills in Western news that the regime has suppressed, but because it is faster at giving news about the communist world, like Soviet nuclear testing, because it even tells East Germans what's going on in their own country. In Ivano's shipyard cafeteria, the point is driven home. A worker is pilloried for stealing tools, and the placard says he was disoriented by listening to Western radio. The lesson? It goes harder with you if you listen to Western radio. Arnold Brinker, 30 years old, is a good worker who knows the score. As a pattern maker in the shipyard, he earns about 800 marks a month, a fine wage for a refugee from Polish-controlled East Prussia, a lot better than he made before as a farm worker.
Ich eröffne hiermit unsere heutige Gewerkschaftsgruppenversammlung.
Brinker attends the periodic pep meetings of the factory brigade to talk about raising productivity and about his part in the struggle for a peace treaty that will end Allied rights. Brinker has learned that he's well treated as long as he plays ball with the communist regime. He has a modern four-room apartment with his wife and two children, and he says he's doing pretty well.
Ja, vom rein ökonomischen Standpunkt gesehen.
From a strictly economic viewpoint, things are okay. I can't have everything all at one time. I know that. but for me it's all right.
Do you feel free politically? Do you have enough freedom, or do you feel in any way repressed?
Oh,
yes, I can't imagine anyone who would want to take away my freedom. So far as my personal freedom is concerned, I don't feel by any means repressed.
For Herr Brünke, not feeling repressed is a subtle and necessary art. Though he assembled his own radio, his mind is vague about some of the sounds he picks up.
What's that? What is that?
What kind of station that is.
Jamming. That's what verstört, nicht?
Could be. Could be. I don't know exactly. We have interference on other frequencies, too. Up here in North Germany, the reception is pretty poor.
But this isn't just bad reception. This sounds like jamming.
Es kann sein. Ich weiß es nicht genau. Ich kann es nicht genau sagen. Wir haben auch...
Could be. I can say definitely. We have whistles on other positions too. It's nothing special.
I think this is RIAS, the American station in Berlin.
Possibly it is, but I don't know that this is RIAS.
Have you ever heard RIAS? Haben Sie einmal RIAS gehört?
Not till now.
Any curiosity about what a station like RIAS says about Germany?
No.
I can't say exactly. I don't know that it can bring very much that is newsworthy.
The propaganda line follows Frau Irma Brünke when she does her daily marketing in the nearby shopping center. Rationing has been officially abolished. Good propaganda. For Frau Brünke knows there is no rationing in West Germany. But some items, like butter, are unofficially rationed. You must register with your neighborhood grocer to buy butter, and he limits the amount. Propaganda tries to explain the scarcity. There's really enough, they say, to go round, but war rumors from Western radio have stimulated hoarding in an attempt to disrupt the East German economy. Even in pampered Rostock, there are queues outside shops. Bad propaganda. And so our communist guides didn't like our showing them. Coffee is sold only in 2-ounce packets. Only ground coffee, because beans are easier to hoard. The price for 2 ounces, 75 cents. Rationed by amount, rationed by price. And when there was a sudden shortage of table salt, the communist press blamed American-operated RIAS, saying a broadcast had advised people that sprinkling salt on their heads would guard them against radioactive fallout. There was no such broadcast, but the communist accusation served a double purpose: explain the shortage and denounce RIAS. East Germany meets America's challenge on the airwaves with a Hate America campaign on its own airwaves. Filmed Havana scenes form the backdrop as Castro's troubadours do a guest appearance from the East Berlin studios. Cuban rhythm with anti-American rhyme.
Dicen los americanos que Fidel es comunista. Dicen los americanos que Fidel es comunista. ¿Y eso qué tiene que ver? Si mi jefe es fidelista, ¿y eso qué tiene que ver? Si mi jefe es fidelista, Cuba sí, Cuba sí, Cuba sí, y Yankees no. Cuba sí, Cuba sí, Cuba sí, y Yankees no.
Ich kann es nicht, kann es.
At Rostock's People's Theater, a play is carefully selected for its propaganda theme. This is the East German premiere of an important new foreign play, American Tragedy, from the Theodor Dreiser novel. In the courtroom, Clyde Griffith must reenact the rowboat murder of his worker girlfriend. Hear the final scene. The final verdict.
Nein.
Expanded into an indictment of America today.
Nein. Nein. Lass mich leben.
Clyde Griffith must die in the electric chair. Nein. The victim of a decadent American society. Or try to get away from it all by dropping in at Rostock's favorite nightclub. At the Trocadero, your friendly host is the state. For a cover charge of 6 marks, that's $1.50, you can dance to By Mere Bis Duchesne. The feature act, Rudi Kupsala, an East German comic who specializes in anti-American sneers. Kupsala's show-stopping gag is about a Berlin friend arriving in New York on his first visit.
New York, kennen Sie alle, ne?
You know New York, don't you?
Gleich am Konsum vorbei, gegenüber der AO. Da stinkt doch die Alte mit der Fackel.
There's the old lady with the torch.
Ja, die stinkt da. Jetzt fahren die doch daran vorbei.
So they sail past it, and an American says to my friend Willy Bald,
sehen Sie diese großartige Statue.
Hey, look at the magnificent statue. This is the expression of our democracy, of our freedom.
Sagt der Willy Bald. Komisch.
Willy Bald says, funny, we do the same thing at home. We also dedicate monuments to our honored dead.
But statues have their meanings in East Germany, too. At Rostock University, a demonstration of Russian liberty. A hot debate as students are asked to make a free choice between two designs for a campus statue. To choose between an abstract nude and a more acceptable socialist form. The naked lady loses by a large margin. And the head of the university, Professor Rudolf Schick, cites this as an example of student democracy in action. You're willing to give these young people a choice between two figures for a statue, but not to give them a choice between two countries.
No, we will not give the choice between two countries. We hope they will learn that it is very good to live in our country and to work here to build up socialism. And therefore, we have the opinion every man has to decide in this direction. And then he can decide many things which he has opinion that's not good and that's better and that is to do so or so. But in the main thing, we have the opinion there can be only one direction. And I think that will be the same also in our democracy.
Professor Schick, what is the democracy which you are trying to teach your students?
What is democracy in our country? I think that is a duty to work for the society and to wish to work for the society and to have a very good meaning for the labor and for the man. And democracy is not that every man can do he wish. He can do everything which is good for the society. And
who will decide that? What is good for society?
Who? The society, same. He must be a part of the society and he must know what is the thing which is good for the development of the society. He must learn it. It's not easy to be a very good socialist.
It is particularly hard for people in the West to understand socialism in this country, in what we call East Germany, because we have before us this evidence of this wall and we wonder, what is the meaning of socialism that is held behind the wall?
As behind the wall, I, for my person, I have not the opinion that I am behind the wall. I think not. That is the opinion of the man, what in what state he is, here or there. When he is on this side, he has to see on the other side also very interesting things and not only interesting things in Berlin or Paris or Washington or New York. And too much of the people in Europe have the opinion that all things of development came from the Western part. I have the opinion many of the things will come from the Eastern part of the world. And we have seen some of the things. I think the man who goes round the world and all that are very good to demonstrate this.
So the wall is intended to direct the attention of your young people in the other direction?
I think that is, and it is not easy to do it, but we have to do it, and I hope we can do it.
Speaking of universities in general, is life different now that the Berlin border is closed?
I think it is easier, because not every man, he has some dangerous things, says, I go to western part of Germany. He cannot go because anything is not in this direction he wish.
It was hard to keep discipline on students because they could always run away, and now they know they must stay.
They could, but they have not done in Rostock.
I'm not speaking of Rostock, but they could.
Yes.
And even the thought that they could made it impossible to keep complete discipline.
Yes. And that's easier today.
Do your students listen much to Western radio?
I have not done.
Do your students listen very much to Western radio?
I hope they don't not, but I hope. We have some discussion with the students, and many of the students will not hear Western broadcasting.
But apparently you listen yourself, since you know what they are emphasizing.
I don't understand.
You must listen to Western radio yourself, since you have told me what Western radio is emphasizing.
I hear Western radio, but I think I have to hear it because I have to know what is the things which are working to our students.
You
but
feel
I think that's not the duty for every man in this country.
Rector Schick admits that it's an uphill fight to get young East Germans to go along with the new order. There are limitations on what can be filmed in an Iron Curtain country. We cannot show you the people we talk to privately, whom it would endanger to film. People to whom the wall in Berlin is a hated symbol of imprisonment. People who cannot understand why they cannot visit their relatives in West Germany. We cannot show you, for example, the young man who told us, "We hate Ulbricht and his system. And if there is no revolt here in East Germany, it is because we learned in 1953 in Berlin and again in 1956 in Budapest, we learned that rebellion is hopeless." We cannot show you the armed camp atmosphere here in Rostock and in the rest of East Germany. The army and the armed factory militia and the ever-present green uniformed police. 600,000 men and women under arms in a nation of little more than 17 million, not to mention the more than 20 Soviet divisions. We were strictly banned from filming all uniformed formations. The reason given to us was odd. That it would confuse the troops who are taught to regard America as the aggressor, it would confuse them to have them filmed by Americans. All this lies behind the facade of the boomtown appearance of Rostock, East Germany's only port, the center of its shipbuilding industry. The new and unfinished port is a bootstrap operation, built on the forced draft with the aid of student brigades and voluntary construction battalions. Opened for business less than 2 years ago, despite the lack of an inland water link. The plan included a canal to the Elbe River, but like many communist plans, the canal remains an unfeasible dream. To Rostock Harbor come a trickle of steamers flying flags that do not recognize the East German flag, but still ready to do business. Here, a capsule of non-recognition. The steamship Guinée, registered in France, which does not recognize East Germany. Just in from Guinea, which barely recognizes France. And Guinea, though friendly, doesn't recognize East Germany either, for that might cost it West German recognition. At least, the port workers recognize the cargo, bananas, though they haven't seen any for a year. These are a Christmas bounty for the East Germans. Their arrival, such an event, that women pitch in as volunteer longshoremen to load them on freight cars. Communist planning also provides a shipyard, the Varno Yards, built on the ruins of a Nazi airplane factory. It now turns out 10,000-ton ships, one every 6 weeks, for members of the Soviet bloc and associate members like Castro's Cuba. Food is a problem in a communist economy. Farms are now almost entirely collectivized, but the regime blames bad weather, not collectivization, for a bad harvest last year. Private enterprise is being slowly squeezed out. But communist planning calls for keeping a certain amount of capitalism going where it serves the communist purpose, but in a tight straitjacket. Konrad Lehmann, whose grandfather founded this liquor plant in 1864, now a reluctant partner of the state. The government owns 20% of the capital. The government tells Lehmann how much to distill, at what price to sell, and it buys the output, except for what Lehmann sells in his own shop.
But life for a capitalist in a communist state is precarious. Lehman served a prison sentence in 1953 for hoarding costs. Another capitalist is Siebrandt Scheel, who makes grease for ship launchings, Germany's second oldest firm of its kind. Now he's a 50-50 partner with the state. So, Professor Scheel, this is the founder of your firm.
The founder of our firm, my great-grandfather, Wilhelm Scheel. He started the business at 1857.
And you are then the fourth generation of Scheels making grease.
Yes, the fourth generation.
But you're the first of this long line to live under socialism.
Well.
And how much money have they invested in your company, the state?
The state invested 60,000 marks.
And how much do they get as a result of this?
Well, the result for the state, 120,000 in 3 years.
In 3 years?
Yes.
So the state has made a 200% return on its investment in your firm?
Well.
Which is not bad.
With it? Not bad.
So then are you happy to have the state as a partner?
Well, this is bequemer.
It's more comfortable.
More comfortable. And it is the thing, it's my home. I intend to remain in my home. And when we have a socialistic system, I must go into this system. There's no other way.
How long do you think that you will have the state only as a partner? In other words, how long do you think it will be before the state will be the only partner?
I cannot say. Well, that is the sake of development in the whole world, I think.
Or at least in this part of the world.
At least, well.
What do you suppose your great-grandfather would have thought of your position now?
I think he would be too old to understand the situation. But before we took the state as partner, I talked with my father. And my father said it is the only way and this is the right way to remain.
Suppose you had refused to accept the state as partner. What would have happened then?
Then this was said, the state said, please take me as your partner, and we are good friends. If I say no, I don't wish, I will not. The state says, you are my enemy.
Herr Scheel submits because otherwise the state will consider him its enemy. Enemy of the state is a fearsome appellation. If one is not an enemy of the state, one can get along, even reasonably well. Because East Germany must compare with the bursting prosperity of West Germany, it doesn't go in heavily for austerity. Its main department store, especially at Christmas season, is relatively well stocked. Toys for the children. A small supply of Finnish refrigerators, more in demand than East Germany's own model. A television set that costs 3 months' pay for an average worker. The glittering dream of an East German Wartburg four-cylinder car at 16,700 marks, or almost 3 years' pay, and a two-year wait. This car will not be delivered until another one arrives to take its place in the showroom. Not what you call an affluent society, but a problem for East Germany is that wages and consumer demand have outpaced the increase in production. Now, with the Berlin escape hatch closed, East Germany bluntly tells its workers they must work harder, produce more for the same pay. But the faces you see in Rostock, as elsewhere in East Germany, are not the pinched faces of an impoverished people. The impoverishment is of a different sort. They appear relatively well-fed, relatively well-dressed. East Germany, in fact, has the highest living standard of any country behind the Iron Curtain, with the possible exception of Czechoslovakia. Rostock looks so prosperous, we are told, that Russian tourists are seldom brought here for fear of arousing their jealousy. But what one misses in these people is any spark of exuberance. They appear submissive and resigned. Although this is a young city, the average age, we're told, is 32 and a half, though it's a young city, it doesn't act or seem young. What you will not see in a Rostock street scene is what is missing. More than 3 million people, almost a fifth of the population, who ran away from East Germany before the wall stopped all that. Inevitably, the question arises, if things were so good, then why do they run away? And why must they be penned in now? The answer is in a German joke. A joke about an East German dog arriving in West Berlin and meeting a West German dog. The East German hound is asked what life was like. Very good, he says. A warm kennel, beef every day. Then why did you run away? Well, says the East German dog, because I like to bark. This is Marienkirche, St. Mary's Church, a church of the Evangelical Lutheran denomination, the biggest church in this district, and on a Sunday morning, one of the loneliest. The dwindling parish hardly fills the space before the altar. Some stay away because it is ill-heated, but there are other reasons. The Lutherans have been under pressure because they represented the last link between East and West Germany, because the pastors refused to help line up the vote for the single slate elections, or to appeal from the pulpit for army volunteers. Reduced now to a core of the old and tenacious faithful, St. Mary's pays the penalty of resistance. Some do not come to public services, we are told, because they fear job discrimination or other pressures. Some have given the pastors private assurance that they are still loyal, although they do not come to services. Just two blocks away, faring much better, is St. Michael's Church of the United Evangelical Brethren, a minor denomination. This church was founded in 1945 when the communists were already in power. The founder, the Reverend Reinhard Jope, who gets along with the state now as he did in Hitler's time, tells how to be successful without trying too hard.
Der hier auf der Kanzel steht.
He who stands in this pulpit has experienced no persecution here in Rostock. I've had the greatest freedom to proclaim the evangelic gospel, and I have, through God's grace, through the help of the authorities, been permitted to build this church.
Und ich glaube, wir machen auch heute nicht den Eindruck,
and I don't think we give the impression that we are very sorrowful. He who has heard our singers, who has joined in our hymns, will see that we are happy Christians in the German Democratic Republic.
Also cooperating with the regime is the Christian Democratic Union, a party allied with the communists in a national front. The CDU flourishes financially, with its own building, a daily and a weekly newspaper published on the presses of the local communist organ. Added profits come from the sale of religious articles and books accenting Christian-communist partnership. Books like Christ Says Yes to Socialism and Christian and Marxist Ethics. The state is not openly at war with religion. All it asks is that Christians cooperate with a regime preaching atheism. Some of the toughest problems the communists face today come from within their own ranks. The party shifts ponderously to meet a shifting line. This is Kropelina Strasse, until recently Stalinstrasse. And this is one of the last places in Rostock where, if you look carefully, you can still see the name of Stalin. Chipped away, but not entirely erased, in a swift and secret overnight operation here as throughout East Germany. It's hard now to read what that sign said exactly, but we filmed it also before the chipping away was done. It was H.O. Gaststätte am Stalinplatz, that is, the restaurant on Stalin Square. H.O. is Handelsorganisation, the state monopoly that runs the restaurants, the hotels, and all the retail establishments. For Stalinplatz is no longer Stalinplatz. It has its old name back now,
Universitätsplatz, or University Square. And the amazing thing was that next morning, no one gaped or stared. They just passed by as though they noticed nothing, for they were not supposed to notice. As in Orwell's 1984, 15 years had gone down the memory drain, down the memory hole, and Stalin had become un-Stalin. And when we asked an official if we could film the pile of signs with Stalin's name that had been taken down, he looked at me blandly and said, "What signs?" If the cult of personality was wrong, then what about this country? What about East Germany, where Walter Ulbricht, one of Stalin's last lieutenants still in power, reigns still over this country? And perhaps because of this, the communist press and radio in East Germany have lately been very busy explaining the difference between Ulbricht, the leader and the teacher, and Stalin, the tyrant. To talk to Ulbricht, we return to East Berlin. Ulbricht is not only the head of the party, but recently took for himself as well the title of chief of state. He was sent in 1945 by Stalin from Moscow to set up a communist state. He has successfully held power ever since. Once a Stalin man, he is now a Khrushchev man. Despite rumors that he might be on the way out, we found no sign of any significant challenge to his power. Sensitive, frontline East Germany is hardly the place to change horses midstream. Mr. Ulbricht, the barricades which have been built around Berlin, are these meant to be permanent? And if not, under what conditions would they be removed?
It's not a question of barricades. It's a question of the state frontiers of the German Democratic Republic. And since the Senate of West Berlin fears that we might interfere in their internal affairs, we have established orderly control in order to demonstrate that none of us has any intention of interfering in the internal affairs of West Berlin.
Mr. Ulbricht, if you consider this as a state border, then how is it that I came into East Berlin without a visa?
That is not in order.
This is not in order. We are of the opinion that international law must apply to the German Democratic Republic, just as I would need a visa to travel to the United States, yes? And I would apply for one, not more than proper, yes? The same should be applicable to a citizen of the United States. But it is a completely different matter with the United States troops who are presently blocking our highways. This provocative demonstration is obviously directed against a peaceful solution of the question involved.
Do I understand correctly, then, that it is your intention to introduce a visa system for foreigners entering East Berlin?
This will be established in exactly the same way as any other country has. When we will introduce it, we will see.
But possibly before a peace treaty?
There are no final decisions on this as yet.
Do you conceive of German unification as a real, practical possibility? And if so, under what conditions?
The way to reunification can be opened only if the United States troops will vacate West Germany, West Germany steps out of NATO, and if the rule of the militarists in West Germany can be overcome by the people themselves. Then the German people will find ways and means to come to an understanding between the two German states. I would like to ask you a counter question. When do you think West Germany will leave NATO?
I don't expect that very soon.
Regrettable.
Turning now to another subject, Mr. Ulbricht, there's a great deal of discussion of the idea of a Big Four agreement on the status of West Berlin. An agreement that would then be written into a separate Soviet peace treaty with you. Would this sort of arrangement be acceptable to you?
You asked me how we stand on the forthcoming four power negotiations. We expect that an agreement will be reached in the four power talks about step-by-step reduction of all present occupation forces in West Berlin. and that agreements will be reached which will guarantee a step-by-step transformation of West Berlin into a free, demilitarized and neutral city. We therefore want the occupation and the occupation statute and the disruptive radio station be removed from West Berlin. You see, we in the German Democratic Republic do not want to set up a broadcasting station in Washington, yes? So why should the United States have a radio station in West Berlin? Why? We don't want to disturb in the United States, and we don't want the United States broadcasting station to molest the people of the German Democratic Republic. Yes? This is a simple question. Therefore, to say it in a few words, West Berlin should not be treated as a United States colony. This is our wish.
If the United States had lost the war, there might well be today a German radio transmitter in Washington.
A fascist station? You mean a broadcasting station of Hitler's Germany? You are mistaken. You have made an error. The Soviet Union has beaten the German troops man for man. And if the United States would not have ended the war, then the Soviet Union would have been able to beat the German Hitler fascism by itself. And peace would have been secured. So you don't have to worry. The Soviet Union would have helped you.
And we might have a Soviet transmitter in Washington.
Prime Minister Khrushchev has repeatedly said in New York and in Washington that the Soviet Union and the other socialist countries have no intention whatsoever of exporting socialism or communism. I would therefore like to reply in conclusion to your questions that there can be only one settlement which would abolish all vestiges of the last war and forever abolish them. There is no other settlement possible. When the United States, if the Western powers do not desire such a settlement, then the peace treaty will be concluded between the Soviet Union and those states which are willing to participate in the German Democratic Republic.
Do you expect a settlement one way or the other in 1962?
We expect that such agreements will come about in 1962.
Since the recent 22nd Soviet Party Congress in Moscow, there have been Stalin monuments and place names removed. I saw a bit of this in Rostock myself. Are you planning any further de-Stalinization measures? And if so, could they affect the personnel of your party and your government?
Ich werde Ihnen nachher den Bericht über die Tagung unseres Zentralkomitees geben.
I shall give you later on a report of our last Central Committee meeting. In this we set forth exactly how the future will go. It was established that we do not have any such Stalinism, yes?
And as you see it, the process of de-Stalinization is complete in East Germany.
In short, there never was any Stalinism, and therefore no de-Stalinization.
Mr. Ulbricht, just to clarify what you said about no de-Stalinization being necessary in East Germany, I saw some of it. I saw in Rostock the changing of street names, the changing of the name of a square. And I know that there have been similar things happening all over East Germany. Could you explain what you mean when you say that no de-Stalinization is needed in this country?
No, it's finished now.
Ulbricht told us that this is a normal state frontier. In a New Year's article in Pravda, he admitted more, that the wall was needed because the refugee exodus cost East Germany 40% of its national income last year. As we returned to West Berlin, it seemed to us that Ulbricht was confirming what we have long suspected about communism, that it does not work when escape hatches are open. A communist society must be a closed society. The wall is not yet high enough to suit Ulbricht. It is not high enough to shut out disturbing thoughts on the airwaves,
or disturbing memories of relatives and friends on the western side. And so this wall needs another act to make it final. The withdrawal of Western troops and Western radio from Berlin. A written agreement in which the West abandons its hopes for East Germany and thus persuades the East Germans to abandon their hopes. It is not just Berlin, but the world that really divides along this line. On our side, there is the agonizing question. Shall we complete the act of yielding East Germany to communism? Shall we accord it the stability it needs in the name of stabilizing peace? And if we do, will communism be content? Or is this only then the first act in an attempt to communize all of Germany, as the East German students are taught that it is? It may be that Western lines are overextended by reaching this far into Berlin. It may be equally true that communist lines are overextended by reaching this far west into Germany. That for us was a lesson of 3 weeks in East Germany. This is Daniel Short.